The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Yeah. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Oh, once she grabs, she won't let go. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
None of that soft stuff.
Rock, rock.
None of that heavy metal stuff.
Rock, rock, rock,
just a little bit of jazz.
Rock, rock, rock,
what do you think?
Just I
like
love
that.
It. You know, that's there are really some great days when you could tell I'd just rather be playing music than doing what I do on a daily basis. But, you know, someone's got to talk about it. So I guess that's us. Welcome to a Thursday, another crazy day in America. I got to tell you, so far what my day has been, this has been one of those really busy, nonstop days. I have not had a moment to turn around. You know, sometimes I have to record interviews in advance because sometimes, you know, the author of a book is only available on a certain day, and today was one of those days. So Robert Draper, who has, you know, written for the New York Times, New York Times Magazine for decades, a respected journalist, has a new book out, and it's really good. It's called Weapons of Mass Delusion, and the subtitle is When the Republican Party Lost Its Mind. So we taped an interview that's going to air tomorrow, and wow, you know, we could have gone on for hours because we're talking about crazy world, which is where we're living now. And then there's another book that also just came out, and I spoke to its author, Kyle Spencer, and the book is called Raising Them Right, The Untold Story of America's Ultra-Conservative Youth Movement and Its Plot for Power. And so I've been in this sort of right-wing headspace for the last few hours, dealing with that insanity that for some reason about half of this country has embraced. And we're, you know, just a little over a week out from the election results. I've stopped calling it Election Day because we're voting now. And you shouldn't wait because chances are, you know, there could be some shenanigans depending where you live at the polling place, and they might try to suppress your vote. So take advantage of early voting. Make sure your vote will count. All right, because we got to get those people out of power because they are nuts. That's a technical term. All right, so it's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. We got a lot to talk about. In fact, up at Down with Tyranny today, one of his posts is headlined, "The DCCC may be blowing it, but many swing district Democrats look like they may well pull through." So Howie did an analysis of who's out there, who could pull it off, and who's worth getting behind to help them pull it off. So in the week and a couple of days that we have left, he'll tell you where to concentrate the effort to get the most bang for our bucks and effort. All right? Okay. So that's coming up at the bottom of the hour. But I do have a guest to start the show with today because I told you we're busy. So there's a new, I guess it's a new program, a new website that I started reading, and you know, there's a need for it. So it's called Define American. And you know what? I'm just going to bring in our guest, Liz Robbins. Is the director of journalism partnerships at Define American. And I'm going to let her explain to you about the study they just did, and the results are just out, about how media covers immigration. And just think about that for a moment, because chances are, especially if you watch local news, you're getting a very skewed look at immigration, depending on the channel you watch. It's a crisis. It's a disaster at the border. They're invading our neighborhoods and our communities. That's the coverage you're getting, and I promise you, it's skewed and it's not accurate, and it's painting a whole lot of people with a very bad broad brush. So, with that in mind, hi, Liz Robbins, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nicole. Happy to be here.
Oh, it's good to have you
here. From the nation's capital.
You're in a lovely hotel room, I see.
I am. I'm here for the Society of Professional Journalists Conference, where I'll be presenting all about this new project that we have that I can't wait to tell you about.
Okay.
But I have to also say, the future is in great hands. I've seen like 2,000 young journalists, and they're hungry and they're ready to report the news accurately.
I love
and
hearing
that's what
that.
We try and do at Define American.
I love hearing that. That's one of my, look, I told you, I just explained about these two interviews I recorded today. And one of them was about how the right has a very organized program. They always accuse the left of indoctrinating the youth. That's exactly what they're doing. They have a coordinated school system, an academy, as it were, to train these kids from a young age to be right-wing nut jobs. We don't on the left, although they say we, you know. So I'm glad to see young people stepping up. And I know they're out there. And one of my biggest problems with the Democratic Party is the geriatric unit that is in leadership on both houses of Congress. Bring some young people in. It's their future. So I'm glad they're there in journalism and want to pick up the mantle because we need them. So that being said, Liz Robbins, tell us what Define American is. DefineAmerican.com is the website. What is it? What do you do?
So it has been around, Define American's been around actually for 11 years,
wow.
But the Journalism Partnerships Program is pretty new. I joined about 18 months ago. And what we do at Define American is really try to humanize the narrative around immigration in all forms of media. So that would be film and TV and artists of any kind, and digital media like YouTube. So I am one of the programs, and what I'm trying to be doing is training journalists, educating them on best practices for covering immigrant communities and immigration. I'm a longtime journalist. I was at the New York Times for 19 years, and I covered immigration in New York City during both the Obama and the Trump years. So I have seen it, and I covered family separation in New York City. I have also covered immigrant neighborhoods. And what we have to know, Nicole, is that immigration policy and the border is what we may all hear about, but real life is in the community.
And again, so it is. And you know, you say Define American, just the name of the group is American, takes on so many different forms. But, you know, let me go back. I'm older. So let me go back to my childhood. And what I learned in school was America is the great melting pot. We're a country of immigrants. We're all shapes, sizes, colors, backgrounds. But they're all American. But that's not what our kids are being taught today, is it?
No, and I would also add that today I'd like to say it's the tossed salad instead of a melting pot, because that's assuming that everybody needs to assimilate. And so other people are defining America and America for them. So let's go with the salad.
I like that. Tossed salad. Again, I'm going back 40, 50 years, more than 50 years. I'm old. So
I'm with you on that. It's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's what we were taught back then. And it's interesting. Interesting. Again, I live in Florida, so we have a governor. Believe me, we're leaving. If Charlie Crist does not win a week from Tuesday, we're going somewhere else. Now, we were planning on going to Arizona, but if Carrie Lake wins there, we're not going to Arizona. This is crazy. We're you know, setting our future based on what happens on Election Day. But what are you going to do? But the fact is that the tried and true stories, history of the nation that we've learned, and that frankly was whitewashed in many ways back then, they're trying to totally rewrite now. I like the tossed salad analogy. Back then, the melting pot made sense, but I don't think they're teaching tossed salad to our kids, are they?
No. And I don't even want to touch on what other people are teaching, Let me tell you what we are teaching. And this is based on research. What we do at Define American is use research and analysis. We did a content analysis of local news, how they cover immigration in one state. We did an audience survey, which was fascinating. And then I did what I have done most of my career, all of my career, and I interviewed people, more than 50 stakeholders in the state of North Carolina. And you're thinking, why North Carolina? Well, it is a purple state. It's a bellwether because in North Carolina, the demographics are changing just as they are throughout the country. And in North Carolina, in the last 20 years, the immigration population has doubled, which is actually faster than the rest of the country.
Wow.
So what's happening there in the major cities like Charlotte and Raleigh and Greensboro are communities that are growing and thriving, but also contributing to the economy and just creating a nexus, not a melting pot, but a nexus. And people used to come to North Carolina for jobs. Remember, it's very agriculturally based, but it's also the research triangle. So the stories that humanize immigrants are the ones that show them as relatable to their own community, whether it be in sports or education or health. These are stories that people will say, oh, I don't see them as the other. I see people as my neighbor. And what we're trying to tell journalists is this is supremely important. But here's the problem. There aren't enough people or resources to tell these stories. Newsrooms are severely underfunded if they're there at all.
Yep. That's
true. You know that local news is really disappearing. And as you said at the top of the show, people are turning to national news. I'm not going to name the channel, but also YouTube and TikTok. And so,
and since you're not going to name the channel, let me just say it's not real news. There are certain channels that are on cable, and so they can get away with calling themselves news when they tend to make a lot of stuff up, because they're not regulated by the FCC. They couldn't do that on over-the-air television. Although there are channels that do anyway, like the Sinclair stations, and we just dealt with one in one of these debates. Down here, a Sinclair station hosted the Florida governor debate, and you could hear it in the questions that were asked. Right. But they walk a very fine line. They still couldn't do some of the things that say what Tucker Carlson says on Fox, not news, because it's not news. And so there's a lot of regulations when it comes to governing the news that you get on over-the-air television, but not on cable television. And that, I don't know if that comes into play in your research or not, but it's another element to the story.
Oh, yeah. We definitely did research that people who watch Fox News, they have certain opinions on immigrants. And even though we did not cite specifically what they were watching and what they felt, we do know from a survey of 1,160 North Carolinians, so that's across the state, that 46% of them felt that immigrants were taking jobs or they were a burden on society. However, here's some good news. The way a story is framed, and this is so key in the language that journalists use, but also the angle and the sources they talk to, like immigrants themselves, can help make people feel differently. It may not change their minds about, oh, they're going to steal our jobs, but we analyze one story in particular, a sports story, and about a group of Indian immigrants who formed a cricket team.
Okay.
That was like this major league cricket. I mean, you know, I'm not a big cricket fan, but that's okay because people outside of Raleigh are.
Right.
And after reading this story in our audience survey, it showed 94% of the people who read the story thought people, as depicted, were good citizens for the country.
Look at that.
So that's how you define American, Nicole.
Right. But the problem, and I want to hear what your study found. What I see, if I watch local news, and I do it less often these days, because if it bleeds, it leads. That's usually the theory in local newsrooms. And you know, I don't want that. Plus, then you've got the influences of the the group, the Sinclair group, and things like that, who put their opinions out there and call it news. It's not news. We need straight news again, which is very rare these days. But I'm guessing in a lot of the stories that you analyzed, that the depictions of immigrants weren't always so complimentary.
No. In fact, we have these two key takeaways: that nearly a third of our sampled articles contain problematic narratives about immigrants. And the most prevalent of the problematic narrative, you can probably guess it, depicting immigrants as either victims without any agency or criminals.
Of course. Well, we had the former president declare, as he declared his candidacy, that the immigrants are murderers and rapists and horrible people. And others felt empowered after that to mimic, to echo what he said.
And what's also interesting, we polled people, and those who said that they believed they knew the most about immigration actually knew the least.
Why am I not surprised?
So this is why it's so important to give the news in a way that people can relate to, through business stories, through education, and again, health issues that connect everybody in a community. And how else do you do that? You do that by collaborating with, say, a radio station and a local newspaper that may have bilingual reporters. Not everybody can connect to other communities. Mm-hmm. But I also want to add, we're not just talking about the Latinx community here, even though it is the largest population, but the fastest growing population is the Asian American Pacific Islander.
Right.
So AAPI, it's like 30% of the immigration, of the immigrant population in North Carolina, and yet 5% of the stories are about them.
Oh, so, and I'm guessing this past year, most of the stories about the AAPI population were about the attacks on them.
Absolutely. And it's just kind of a vicious circle.
So that's the victim. And that's the victim you were talking
it's
about,
the
right?
Victimizing. But what language do you use? And this is so key for reporters to not only go into a community when a tragedy happens in response to the spa shootings in Atlanta or hate crimes, anti-Asian hate crimes, but to establish sources beforehand. Because a lot of mainstream media outlets are not that trusted because they haven't covered immigrant communities before. So I have been covering immigrant communities, communities that I don't look like and may not belong to. And you know how you do it? You listen, you smile, you bring an interpreter if you don't speak that language. So much of what we're doing these days, Nicole, is talking and not listening.
Yeah.
And so that's what I advocate for.
So listening, you know, you said what you've done throughout your career is you interview people, you talk to them. That's the thing I love about what I do here is I'm pitched on a topic. Usually a lot of times I go out searching for certain things I want to talk about. In this case, I was pitched and I'm reading about this new study from this group, Define American, how you did a survey of local news to see how they're covering immigration. And, you know, that's fascinating to me because I know they're not doing a good job. And it's probably not all their fault either. As you said, parts of it are there's no funding. Newsrooms are being cut / left and right, whether you're talking television, radio, or newspaper. The jobs just aren't there. Everything's consolidated. So there's fewer reporters actually doing the work. But then you've got this voice in your head telling you how you need to slant the story and which way to skew it. And depending on who owns the station that you're broadcasting or the newspaper that you're writing in, chances are that is going to determine the skew of your story. And it shouldn't be that way. That's not news. That's opinion.
No. And we could get into a whole discussion on objectivity and journalism and how, you know, having a position actually is not something that's negative. It's that you are informed.
Right.
I have to tell you that the people who are doing this in local news, the young reporters, so I'm going to go back to what I started with.
Great.
There, a lot of them are early career reporters for a fantastic program called Report for America. And it's modeled on the Teach for America program, and they're core members. So it's service journalism. And they are upholding, if you will, local journalism, especially about immigration, because they cover marginalized communities. But you can't expect a nonprofit program to do that alone. You need buy-in from newspapers and TV stations and radio stations across the country. So, you know, we found that this is great that they're early career reporters who are thrown into this, but we need more. And this is insufficient. And I think a lot of journalists know this. Editors have told me this. They're like, I know, we just don't have the money or the time. But that's what this report, I actually did a printout of it. You can get it on our website, but it's really beautifully done. There's some younger reporters in here and our whole demographics page, so you can see these. I really want to credit these reporters. They are going into communities because they're passionate about it. And I do think that they need the support across the country, and it's support in every form of media, podcasts especially, and not just your dead tree newspaper. I grew up on it. It is changing. TikTok is changing the news. And the way we present it is so crucial. So journalists need to be informed, so their audiences can be informed.
Most definitely. Now, if people want to do two things, they can. They can go to defineamerican.com. They can see all about the study, what the results are, and how you're using it. So what do you do with it now that it's done?
It's out in the world as of yesterday. I picked this up last night. I'm so excited. But the big thing is to go into newsrooms. I spoke today to television anchors and also reporters who said, oh my goodness, we're in San Antonio. We need this. It's almost like cultural competency, but I have a 1-hour training session that I do online. I have a longer 2-hour training session. But Define American's plan is really to educate. And what I'm telling people is we've got a 3-point plan. So you want to integrate your coverage. You want to collaborate if you don't have the resources in your newsroom. And then you want to educate every staff member, editor, or reporter, producer should know something about immigration and the language to use, because you're going to be on a story one day. So those are my 3 principles. I'm a 1-woman show with a great backing from Define American, and Jose Antonio Vargas is the founder.
The
person who is the glue of our wonderful organization. And of course, he's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist from The Washington Post. And I know that this is extremely important, but we couldn't do all this without research. And our research director has been at Define American for 5 years. Facts matter. And Sarah Lowe, as our director of research, has really been directing all of our programs to show the data so we can then inform our audiences, and our audiences are journalists.
Yes, but they're also news consumers, hopefully. I mean, I'm hoping my listeners who are consumers of news will check out the website. I got to say, the website is really well done. It's easy to navigate, easy to read. Fun. You have it laid out well. Yeah. So you get the facts. It's really well done. And as a consumer of news, we need to be more selective and more demanding of what these news organizations are giving us. And you have the right to call them, to go in and say, hey, you're not covering immigration well. Why don't you, station manager, check out this report, because it might help you to do your job, to do a better job of covering our community, which includes a lot of immigrants.
And, you know, at the end of the day, Nicole, it's also good business. People who watch, buy things, they also subscribe to the news organization.
Sure.
It's the bottom line, which, you know, money does attract a lot of news organizations, because we need more of it in news. So that's what I would end with. It's not only responsible journalism, it's good business.
Definitely. So the study is Reimagining Immigration News, North Carolina's Case for the Nation. Congratulations on it. I'm sure you're proud. It just dropped yesterday. In fact, we were going to talk yesterday, and I had to reschedule because I had taped the interview with the author who I spoke to.
My former colleague.
Well, right. Because my Mark Ebner, I had on to talk about this book about the about the whole Falwell thing. And it went on a lot longer than I expected it to. Sometimes you don't know. And I realized I just wasn't going to be able to give you enough time. And so luckily you could do it today. And it all comes together. That's how you do it when you're doing, you know, covering news and information and doing a live show every day. You got to be flexible. But, you know, you want to give the stories the right, you know, you don't want to rush anybody. So, and
you
I didn't want to rush you.
Audible sometimes.
Yes,
so thank you for calling that. Yeah. I appreciate it, Nicole.
My pleasure. And thank you for joining us and bringing this to us. I think it's fascinating. And I love that you're at the Society for Professional Journalists conference there. We need young people involved. And again, I rail against the Democratic Party leadership because they need to bring young people in and they haven't. Journalism, let them lead the way because we need young people in some of these news organizations too. Oh my God.
We're all here.
Good. Encourage them, nurture them. I'm ready for them to take over because our generation didn't leave them in a great position. So I'm ready for them to take the helm. And I'll go along for the ride.
You inspired me now. Thanks so much, Nicole.
All right.
Terrific.
Liz, thank you so much. It was great to meet you and stay in touch. Let me know what you guys are up to.
I definitely will. Thanks for highlighting Defund America and what we do.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for doing it. All right. You take care. Have fun at the conference.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. All right. Liz Robbins. And again, it's defineamerican.com. That's what, and do check out the website. It's really interesting. I know sometimes we don't have enough hours in the day to explore all the things we want to explore. But, you know, if you're bored, U2 audio is going off again, huh? Damn. Okay, so the audio thing, Spocko has been helping, and a couple others of you have been helping. It is a weird thing having to do, I think, with YouTube and the software that I use to stream video. I believe that the audio stream is glitch free. We don't have those gurgling issues over there, but we're working on it. Just know. So today I made sure I have the latest software installed. I do. I saw that I had one of my audio settings off a little bit. So I was hoping that the adjustments fixed the problem, but apparently they didn't. And what I'm guessing is, because you guys are telling me you heard the problem with the guest. When I have a guest coming on through Zoom, maybe that's where the issue is. See, this is my producer engineer hat coming in over the host control saying, make a note of this. So I wear a lot of hats here. All right. Another hat that I wear is, again, chief cook and bottle washer. I do everything. One thing I don't do is sell advertising. I've never been a salesperson. Can you tell? Basically this show and my income depends on your generosity. So if you listen to the show, you enjoy it, if you can afford it, make a contribution. One time, ongoing, however you want to do it is fine with me. I'm not proud. I'll take whatever you can offer. But you know what? If you're hurting right now, as some people are, just enjoy the show. Don't worry about it. There are plenty of people who can afford it who don't. And those are the ones I want to, you know, to contribute. Okay. So you can also commission a painting. There's one of my dogs, Sasha, behind me. I paint pet portraits. I have art for sale. You can go to paintyourpets.net. There's some stuff that's already done that's available. Lots of ways to support the show. I just, you know, if you get anything out of it, I hope you will. All right. Okay. All right. So it is Thursday. It is when Howie Klein joins us. And you know Howie Klein blogs at downwithtyranny.com. He is the man behind the Blue America PAC. And they identify good candidates, progressive candidates, and then support them through their runs, help raise money for them, really do all the heavy lifting, and separate the true progressives from the rest of the gang. So that's who Howie is. He's with us just about every Thursday. So let's not wait any longer because it is that time of day. Now we bring Howie in with a little help from our friend Boca Brittany Summers. And I believe she's the one who coined the name of that drink that by this time on Friday afternoons, many of us need. It's the Dirty Debbie. If you don't go that way, maybe just, you know, he's got some extra sweet and lows for you. All right, Howie Klein coming up.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary
sweet
and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of downwithtyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hey, Howie Klein.
Hi, Nicole. How are
you? I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
Also good, thank you.
Good. So we're a week and a couple of days away from the end of this election season. I've decided I'm not calling it Election Day anymore.
Right.
Right. Because it's not Election Day. And people need to vote as early as they can in case there are some shenanigans at their polling place and or all of a sudden they're not on the voter roll. So they have time to fix it. Right?
Exactly. I voted already. Did you?
I did, and I got the email yesterday that said, we've received your ballot and your vote has been counted.
All right, great.
Yeah, love that. And now we have a few rallies happening down here in South Florida. Have you heard all the drama? First of all, Joe Biden is coming, but he's coming. His rally is Tuesday afternoon with Charlie Crist from 4 to 6 in the afternoon. I can't do that.
All right.
So there's that. And then Donald Trump announced that he's coming to Florida to do a rally with Marco Rubio. You know who wasn't invited?
Rick Scott.
Well, Rick Scott, but he's not running for anything. He's not up for re-election right now. Who else who's running for re-election is a
Rhonda?
Rhonda Santos was not invited.
Well, I could imagine.
Yeah. So apparently the DeSantis camp is really upset because, you know, Trump is dissing them. Well, Rhonda in the debate last week was asked point blank by Charlie Crist, if you win, will you serve the full 4 years? And little macro just stare, you know, Ron stared into the camera like a deer in headlights and didn't have an answer. Just didn't answer. So I guess there's some friction there.
Yeah, it looks that way. And you know who else is coming down to Florida for a little rally?
Who?
Or event, at least, anyway, is Ted Lieu. He's coming there to campaign for Annette.
Oh, for Annette Tadeo. Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, very cool. God, I'd love to see him when he's here. I don't know when he's coming, but let's see. Anyway, that's good. Annette Tadeo, I think out of all of them, has the best shot at winning.
Out of all of who?
Out of unfortunately, Crist and Demings and that group of Democrats running in Florida.
Yeah, I have a feeling this is going to be a very bad year for Florida Democrats.
Well, let me tell you something. Florida historically always had more registered Democrats than they did Republicans until this cycle. There are now around 300,000 more registered Republicans in Florida than there are Democrats. And it just reinforces what I've been saying all along. The Florida Democratic Party sucks out loud. Horrible. Just horrible. And the Broward Democratic Party, which I had personal experience with, just reprehensible. They'd rather fight against the progressives in their group than take on the Republicans.
Well, yep, that's the same for the Democratic Party establishment all over the country. I mean, Florida is usually in a contest with Ohio for worst Democratic Party in the country. But that's not to say that most of the others aren't nearly as bad.
Right, right. And, you know, look, I think I could be wrong, but I think that the leadership of the Democratic Party has about worn itself out. And it's time to let the next generation take over. They're there. They're ready to go. It's just these people are holding on for dear life. Like I can see the picture in my head with the, you know, the fingernails holding on to the building before they fall off the side.
Yep. Well, they can always look at the Republicans and say, we're not that bad.
Well, no, but you know, we'll see who has power come January.
Yeah.
So, Howie, you have got a post up at downwithtyranny.com, and the headline is, the DCCC may be blowing it, but many swing district Democrats look like they may well pull through. And so I thought this would be a good exercise for today, for the people who are still, you know, wanting to help, wanting to phone bank or canvas or do whatever they can to get as many Democrats in the win category as possible. We talked last week about a lot of people, you know, using their heart rather than their minds to decide, and they're giving money to Marjorie Taylor Greene's opponent, which is throwing it away because she's going to win. So you did an analysis of these swing districts and where the races are winnable, and who people should support. So you want to tell us which are the races that are worth getting into to help out?
Right. So for progressives, that's one thing. And for Democrats, it's a much wider field.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at was the all of the races that are divided by 5% or less. So in other words, I'm not looking at races where the Democrat is running away with it, or where the Democrat is so far down they have no chance. I'm just looking at the races where it's very, very close. But it's an arbitrary cutoff. There were some races that were 5.1%, but you have to cut off somewhere, and I cut off at 5%.
Okay.
So you have that thing in front of you?
Yep.
I should say that if people are down to their last few bucks and they're looking for progressive candidates who are in very, very close races that they want to send money to,
mm-hmm.
last minute money for get out the vote efforts, basically is what it's going to be for. Jamie McLeod Skinner in Oregon,
yeah.
is a really good possibility. Let's see.
You have Matt Cartwright.
Chris DeLuzio in the old Connell Lamb district. West of Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
That's a very good one. Those people are both down like very, very, very – well, no, actually, Chris is up a little bit. If I remember correctly, I wrote this last night, Jamie is down by 0.4.
Okay.
So it's a tie. Those are two really good races to put money into. There were a couple of others as well.
Yeah, you had Matt Cartwright also of Pennsylvania and Michelle Vallejo of Texas.
Right, also extremely close. You know, the Michelle Vallejo one is just outrageous because the DCCC has, you know, because she's a very progressive, they've stopped supporting her. So they're not putting it, they withdrew all of the money that they had planned to spend on her. They canceled the advertising that they were buying, and they're putting it into conservative races instead. They you know, they don't. And even though she's much closer to winning, she's a little bit ahead, as a matter of fact. And they're putting it into races where it's going to be people who don't vote for the progressive agenda.
Well, like Sean Patrick Maloney, how much money are they putting into his race?
Yeah, well, he's already spent millions of dollars and outspent his rival, I don't know, by four or five or six times. He spent so much more money than the Republican mm-hmm. in that district who's running against him. But what the problem there is that the people who live there, they had their own congressman already, a Democratic congressman. What's his name? Jones, Mondaire Jones.
Uh-huh.
And they did not appreciate the way Sean Patrick Maloney sort of elbowed Jones out of his own seat to take that seat just because it was slightly more blue than the district one up,
right.
You know, one north that he was in. So the irony now is he's losing and his old district is electing a Democrat.
It's really sad that Mondaire Jones will be out of Congress. And Sean Patrick Maloney just elbowed his way into that seat and forced, you know, him out. It's a screwed up system. It just really is.
Lives in the district. And what people are saying in the district now is that let's get rid of Maloney. He sucks anyway. And so don't vote for him. These are Democrats talking. And then Mondaire will run in 2 years and we'll get him back.
Wow. Okay. But that sucks because we're going to have a really brutal 2 years if the predictions from the polls play out. I don't trust the polls. And by the way, the media is not reporting it. But did you see there's a big swing again in the generic congressional poll or whatever they did. Where the Democrats are up against again. So,
well,
it's a horse race, right?
Today and which poll it is and who's paying for the poll. But if you recall in that story that I wrote, where I said it doesn't really matter that, for example, the state of Alabama went from 58% Republican to 70% Republican. That doesn't make any difference. That's a Republican state. It doesn't matter. Nor does it matter, you know, if in very, very blue districts, it went from 60% to 70% blue. Doesn't matter. What matters are the swing districts. And from the analysis that I put up on that post, the Democrats are holding pretty well in the swing districts. They're certainly not, the victim of these national numbers that we're seeing.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not as nervous and worried about it. You know, the national numbers don't really mean that much. They may mean somewhat more in the Senate races, but they don't mean an awful lot. It doesn't matter how many more percentages it goes up in Mississippi and Alabama and Louisiana. It doesn't make any difference.
Right.
What matters is what's going to happen in Texas 15, where Michelle Vallejo is beating a Trump fanatic.
Gotcha.
That's.
Yes. Well, and that's important. And that's why I'm glad you're telling people so they know these are races where you can make an impact. You can still make a difference and help, you know, get someone we could really use in Congress across the finish line. There's another story that happened this week that I need to ask you about, and it's not fun to look at. And that is, what the fuck was that letter that the Progressive Caucus sent to Biden? What happened there? What was that?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. When I first read about it, I thought of calling Pramila and asking her what that was all about. And then I thought, she must be so sick about this whole thing that she doesn't want to hear any more questions about it. And I mean, the letter is a year old. I believe it was written by Mark Takano. They sort of, nothing happened with the letter.
Right.
People didn't like it that much. There were a few people that signed it. And then suddenly someone rewrote the letter a bit and made it different, and then it wound up getting sent out on behalf
with 30 signatures on it that again were right. months old, right?
So so it didn't represent the Progressive Caucus. So it was just the people who signed it, and then they withdrew it like a day or two later. I don't know what happened there.
It's another stupid unforced error. and I'm probably using the term wrong because I'm not a sports person, but really, that should not have happened. Look, I like Pramila Jayapal, but this is two slams against her that are, you know, that are looking like two things that, and I don't know what happened, but twice now she's looking like she dropped the ball or did something wrong, and we can't afford that.
But we don't know what happened.
No, we don't know.
And
what
I really
happened.
I guess I really should ask her.
Yeah.
I have a theory that someone put the letter out to hurt her.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah. That's what I think happened. A friend of yours, as a matter of fact.
Uh-oh, a friend of mine. Uh-oh.
Certainly not a friend of mine. But and the thing is this. Pramila was getting ready to make a leadership bid. Not to be speaker, but to be part of the leadership. And the and Hakeem Jeffries doesn't want that.
Right.
And one of his, I think, and I don't know, it's just my theory, that one of his allies might have done this. I got to check it out and see.
But, you know,
too many people are asking me.
Right. This is what Democrats do, though. And that you know, it's just infuriating, especially at election time. Stop it. Don't screw things up. Just, you know, try to get us across the finish line. I don't know. It's frustrating.
I don't know that any voters are really paying much attention to this thing. I think it's just inside baseball.
I guess maybe, but you know, news junkies are, and it frustrates the hell out of me. So it makes me more interested in reading your posts on, say, the Ramones. You have a great piece up about the Ramones and cancer. In college, I was a huge Ramones fan, and I did my very first radio special when I was in college was a Ramones special. I was in Tampa. It was 1980, I believe, and they were playing at the Agora Ballroom, which had just opened up in Tampa. And I got an interview with them. We went up to their hotel. There were three of us who worked at this community radio station, WMNF. It's still there in Tampa. It had just gone on the air that year. And we got to interview Johnny and Joey Ramone. And it was horrible. I mean, I can go back and listen to it now and just cringe. But how cool was it that I was this college kid and I got to interview Johnny and Joey Ramone? But you knew them. You managed their label.
Right. So not in the very beginning. I was a DJ on a college station, although I wasn't a college student. And we were playing a lot of Ramones. And I knew their manager really well. He introduced me to the guys in the band, I think in about 1976, just when I got back from Europe, from living in Europe. So I came back. They were the first band I met when I got back. I became friends with them. I met them before they were signed. I think they had been signed, but they didn't have a record out yet. And then whenever they would come to San Francisco, I was, you know, kind of like a host for them. On some level, they didn't stay at my house, but I would show them stuff like that. So you know, I got to know them real well. So the post that you're referring to that I wrote about a few days ago was that both Joey and Dee Dee were already dead.
Yeah.
And Johnny was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And he was diagnosed with prostate cancer at the same time that I was. So we were both diagnosed at the same time. Now, everyone is different, and every prostate cancer is different. So I'm not saying that, you know, so please do not read into this and think that I'm saying that if he only would have done exactly what I did, he'd be alive today, because
right.
That's not the case. I don't know what kind of, you know, he may have had very, very aggressive prostate cancer. I know I didn't. But in any case, a few years in, he wasn't getting any better. And it was kind of like, you know, people were saying, you know, Howie's all better.
Yeah.
And he and I had a very kind of funny relationship because he's a Republican.
Yeah.
And I've never hidden where I am politically. So he, you know, he used to always call me a communist. This is going all the way back from, you know, before we worked in the same label, him as an artist and me as an executive.
Wow.
You know, but it was a friendly, very, very friendly relationship. Even in fact, when I would do fundraising for progressives, he would always, you know, curse me out as being a communist, and my candidates for being communist, and then he would pony up some contribution. But so he wasn't like some kind of horrible fascist at all, not in the slightest. But in any case, that's, by the way, if you hear that ringing in the back, that's like
phone.
Roland trying to convince me to make dinner tonight.
I was thinking somebody wants to get a hold of you in the worst way.
That's right. So he's like, ready? Could you make some of that fancy soup? Yeah. So anyway, and he's referring to cream of celery soup, where I don't use actual cream,
right?
And it's made of celery roots.
Mm.
In any so Johnny came over one day and he said, so what's the magic potion? Why are you all better and I'm still fucked up? And I told him about I had a holistic doctor who had a whole treatment regimen. It was very, very strict, and it was, you know, extremely invasive for most people. Mm-hmm. Like, you had to stop drinking alcohol, which is no problem for me because I don't drink alcohol. You couldn't use drugs or tobacco, no problem for me because I didn't. You couldn't eat any sugar, no problem. That was at the time, it was a problem, but it wasn't. It was a problem I was happy to embrace. I knew I was doing the right thing to not be eating sugar. But, you know, and there was a lot to it. And it wasn't like an easy thing. It was quite difficult. But, you know, we're talking about life and death here, so you maybe want to try the difficult. And he just laughed at me and said, oh, God, you're such a hippie. And
a communist and a hippie. And, yeah. And he died.
So
you know,
he died.
Yeah. I hated reading this. I mean, I love reading your stories, and you are writing a book, and I'm thrilled. I can't wait to see it. But as he goes along, how he's posting stories on Down with Tyranny from his days as a, you know, music executive and head of Reprise Records.
Way
and
before
so,
that as well. I mean, I'm
that.
Posting things about when I was traveling the world, when, you know, and when I was a hippie,
uh-huh.
when I was a communist, all sorts. I keep finding things. I never find what I'm looking for. So I go looking for something like a picture. I wrote a story about an old boyfriend of mine named Otto. So it's like a running joke. I went and looked for a picture of Otto, and I just found my 1967 ripped up draft card.
Oh, wow.
Literally, I found it. I didn't find the picture of Otto, but I found the ripped up draft card. And I posted a letter from Timothy Leary that he sent me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that was especially oh wow because it was we were talking about him coming to my school to play to give a lecture. And he did come, as it turned out. He was asking me for a $300 honorarium because he was fighting for all of our rights.
Yeah.
And I was happy to give him $300. And when he got there, I picked him up and drove to the campus with him. And he gave me a bunch of LSD, including the very first trip I ever took.
Oh, wow. Now that's a story to tell. That's great. Yes. Awesome. I hope you don't mind. We, you know, it is Medicare open enrollment time. So you told the story of the prostate cancer, which thankfully you were cured from. So you've had cancer three times.
That's right.
Okay. So the second time was
that was the big one.
The big one, the toughie. And I know it was a rare form of cancer. What was it?
Mantle cell lymphoma. In those days, when I was diagnosed, it was extremely rare. There was something like 5,000 cases a year. And so my doctor didn't even know what it was. It's not, I don't think it's any less rare or more rare now. It's just now that people know, now doctors know what it is, so it's not rare anymore.
Right. And the reason I bring it up is I had Wendell Potter on the show last week because it was Medicare open enrollment starting, and we want to let people know about that Medicare Advantage is actually disadvantage and it's not Medicare. You had traditional Medicare, and this was a very rare, unknown at the time, form of cancer, that the treatment was kind of experimental and everything was covered, right?
Everything was covered. I stopped looking at the bills, which I didn't have to pay at one cent of. For some reason, I never paid anything. I stopped looking when they crossed the $1 million mark. I'm sure they've long passed the $2 million mark. And it was all covered and no Medicare Advantage at all. It was just, everything got covered. And not only that, but
the woman who is considered to be the world expert in mantle cell lymphoma. She's the one that has invented the new treatments. She was my physician.
Wow.
This is a woman who mostly does research, but yet I wound up as part of her research. She wound up as my doctor. Oh, and that's funny because we were talking a minute ago about prostate cancer.
Yeah, right.
And the doctor I was telling you about, the holistic doctor, he wrote a book after my treatment, and I'm one chapter in the book.
That's what you said. You know, the thing, I did want to tell about the Medicare, because you had traditional Medicare, and yes, it took care of you in that situation. When if you had Medicare Advantage, chances are they would have denied the treatment because it was, quote, experimental. Just to let people know that that's the difference, and now is the time when they can do that. But then I read your thing with Johnny Ramone about prostate cancer, and you know, the show, that our segment every week begins with the piece, the Chucky Schmucky Hour with Dirty Debbies and all that. That was produced by my dear friend Boca Brittany Summers. Boca is a trans woman, and she was just recently diagnosed with metastatic prostate cancer. She didn't know. She all of a sudden she couldn't walk. She thought she needed back surgery, and it turns out that a piece broke off and it spread and wrapped around her spine, and she couldn't walk. And thankfully, she's a veteran, and they took her in at the VA and have been giving her amazing care. Thank goodness. But she's dealing with really bad prostate cancer. So this is just, God, get checked. That's all I can say to people is go to the doctor. Trust science. Get checked and make sure you have the right insurance. And if you're Medicare eligible and you can afford it, get the traditional Medicare and don't go for the Advantage stuff because it's not an advantage.
What do you mean if you could afford it?
Well, see, with traditional Medicare, everybody pays, I think it's like $170 a month for your Medicare Part B. It comes out of your Social Security, so you don't really realize it because it's automatically taken out. That amount's going down this year, thanks to the Biden administration. Then you need a gap policy because 20% is your responsibility. There are gap policies that will handle that, take care of that 20%, but it gets expensive, and it's a lot more expensive than Medicare Advantage, which in some cases they pay you to take because it's a scam. And the insurance companies bilk the government for more money, and they can deny you services. They could say, nope, we're not going to treat that. That's an experimental treatment. It's not Medicare. It is a for-profit private health insurance plan just under the heading of Medicare Advantage.
Right. So everybody is a victim of the Bush Medicare, so
yes.
Republican Medicare,
right.
Which is the drug policy.
That's Part D. Now,
the drugs were
not included
in the original Medicare,
nope.
So they did this Part D.
Right, and you have to pay extra for that too.
Because it's only oriented towards Big Pharma. They wrote the bill, and talk about a scam. That's what this is.
That's right.
So I have that as well. So when you're in the hospital, you get treated under Part B, so this doesn't kick in. But as soon as you leave the hospital and you need medicine, then you're suddenly at their mercy.
Right.
So I'm just going to give one example.
Okay.
So one of the side effects of the treatment that I got was that I have a neuropathy for life. And they don't know how to treat neuropathy. I mean,
no.
It's shocking to me, since so many people have it, that they haven't come up with a way to deal with it.
They give you gabapentin, right? That's what they gave me.
That's one of the things, yes. But gabapentin is not a cure. It's just, I don't know what the hell it does. It doesn't do anything for me, but I take two a day. But then there's another thing called like lacosamide. That's the generic term for it, but it's it doesn't matter what it's called. Anyway,
right.
So those are the two ways that they deal with it. Neither of them is a cure.
Right.
But the gabapentin is doesn't cost anything. I don't know. It's like,
it's
cheap. It costs $2 a month.
Right.
So it's nothing. But the other one, the lacosamide, in this country, although in no other countries, but in this country, It's about $10,000 a month.
Whoa.
So it's an immense amount of money for anybody. And it doesn't do any good. So I get it overseas. And it's difficult because the drug companies really get somehow, they get the authorities to crack down real hard on it. So you can't get it in Canada at all. You know, they won't send it. But, you know, you can go down to Mexico. You feel like you're smuggling because you are smuggling. You're not allowed to take it in. It's tough. I would go to Thailand sometimes and get it. I got it in Turkey 1 year. I got it in France. I got it in Italy. In every other country, it's a reasonable amount of money, except this country. When I call up Medicare to talk to them about it, it goes through, in my case, it's Humana. What they say, Humana said they blame it on Medicare. And Medicare says, well, look, they can sell it to you if they want to, but we recommend it for diabetic neuropathy. So there is no difference between diabetic neuropathy and the neuropathy you get from cancer treatment. It's exactly the same. It's no different.
Right. It's
but
neuropathy.
Yet, if you have it from diabetic neuropathy, you can get it relatively inexpensive. Not, it's still expensive, but not as expensive. But if you have it through cancer treatment, no. They won't cover any of the costs. And there's no...
Wow. And there's no what?
There's no reason.
Yeah, no. It's all arbitrary. And that's what happens when the for-profit insurance companies get involved. They arbitrarily can deny you coverage. But I thought, well, that the Part D, I don't understand how that works. I understand a gap policy on a traditional Medicare plan, even though it is administered by one of the for-profit health insurers, they can't deny you coverage. If the doctor orders it, they've got to pay up the 20% that the gap is covering. But
right. Medicare negotiates with them, which means when you use the word negotiate, it means Medicare tells them what they can charge. And when they don't agree, Medicare says tough shit.
Right. Wow. It's all so complicated. I still have a couple of years before I'm Medicare eligible. And I hope it gets straightened out before then. And I hope they do away with Medicare Advantage because it's taking advantage of people. Jan in the chat room just wrote, Mayo Clinic will not schedule any Medicare Advantage paid insurance holders. Wow. That is interesting. I'm going to have to look into that one. All right, Howie. Well, we got 1 week left. How are you feeling?
I feel fine. I wrote about it this week and explained how I feel. I feel pretty good about the swing districts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I say don't listen to the polls because they have not been reliable in the last few years. Why? You know, trust them now. Let's believe that the American people want to retain some form of democracy and don't want to descend into fascism again, right? And have faith that they'll do the right thing. I'm trying too. All right, cool. Howie Klein, as always, find him at downwithtyranny.com. And tell Howie my doctor's office Honda hounded me into taking Medicare Advantage in order to retain him as my primary care physician. I was naive and trusting. Oh, God, don't listen to us. Don't listen to them. Listen to the doctor, but not when it comes to questions about insurance. Oh, my God.
My doctor said something very similar, and I fired him.
Good. And Chris says, I feel pretty good about the Ramones no matter what. So there you go. All right, Howie, with that, I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks. Bye,
okay.
Nicole.
Bye. Thank you. All right. Howie Klein, everybody. And with that, we're done. Now, tomorrow, speaking of doctors, you know, I am now 6 years cancer-free. I'm to the point because once I passed 5 years, I go to yearly screenings. But my oncologist, who I really, really liked, was when I first started with him, he was at the University of Miami, Sylvester Cancer Center in Miami. And I stayed with him and I'd go, you know, see him for 5 years, getting all the CAT scans and everything. And once 5 years passed, he declared me cured, but I still have to go in for yearly, screenings. And he left the University of Miami. He went to a private practice, I think that he was helped start up. And So I went to make an appointment with him and they said, oh, he's not here anymore. Like, what? So I tracked him down. I actually had his cell phone number. Good doctor, oncologist gave me his cell phone number. And I called him and he said, I'm going back to University of Miami. I'm like, yeah, okay. So my appointment with him is tomorrow. It's tomorrow at like 1 o'clock and it's down in Miami. But good news is I interviewed Robert Draper today and that's going to run tomorrow. I'll be here anyway. I'll be back in time. So we'll have the Robert Draper interview and then about a half hour to do other stuff. But it'll be a Friday, so who knows? We'll play it by ear. But I am going for my annual screening. He's going to send me for a CAT scan that'll probably happen sometime in the next couple of weeks. I'm just telling you this stuff to tell you to please go to the doctor, even if you feel okay. Go for an annual checkup just to get a baseline. And then if something's wrong, they can compare. Because the only reason I'm still here is by accident. Because if you remember, thought I was having a heart attack. They thought I might have had a heart attack. In the hospital, the first thing they did was a chest x-ray that showed a mass on my lung that turned out to be lung cancer. We caught it really early. So they removed it. They removed most of my left lung, but I didn't need chemo, didn't need radiation, and I'm still alive. So, and now it's 6 years. So get the screening. And if you've ever smoked, get a lung cancer screening. I hadn't smoked in over 20 years when I was diagnosed. So anyway, 5 years is the magic number. Once you pass the 5-year mark, they tell you you're clean, you're clear. But you still have to go in for the annual screenings because it comes back. And I know that from friends. And the older I get, the more friends it happens to. So anyway, all right, with that, I'm just rambling and it's late. So until tomorrow, the interview with Robert Draper. Now, I taped with him, finished up, was getting ready for the next one, had the radio on Progressive Voices, and Tom Hartman comes on. And who does he have on? Robert Draper. My interview was better. I can say that. You decide. Listen tomorrow, you decide. All right, I'll see you then. I'll leave you with the news. Thanks for listening, everyone. Until tomorrow. Adios, amigos.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, that's a nice surprise. The U.S. economy grew in the third quarter at an annual rate of 2.6%, its first increase in 2022, and a sharp turnaround after 6 months of shrinking. And this comes as the media and Republicans continue fear-mongering the risk of a recession. Now, we're not out of the woods, but this is evidence that you shouldn't believe the doom and gloom predictions from the right and the horse race-obsessed media. Lots of court action in the news, starting with a judge in South Carolina ruling on Wednesday that Mark Meadows, the former guy's last chief of staff, must testify before an Atlanta area grand jury investigating efforts by Trump and his allies to influence Georgia's 2020 election results. Judge Edward Miller said, I'm going to find that the witness is material and necessary to the investigation and that the state of Georgia is assuring not to cause undue hardship to him. Meadows' attorney, of course, said he plans to appeal. Speaking of Georgia, the Republican Senate candidate from Georgia, Herschel Walker, is now accused of pressuring a second woman to have an abortion.
After discussing the pregnancy with Herschel several times, he encouraged me to have an abortion and gave me the money to do so. I went to a clinic in Dallas, but I simply couldn't go through with it. I left the clinic in tears. When I told Herschel what had happened, he was upset and said that he was going to go back with me to the clinic the next day for me to have the abortion. He then drove me to the clinic the following day and waited for hours in the parking lot until I came out. He then drove me to get medications and supplies as prescribed and then drove me home. I was devastated because I felt that I had been pressured into having an abortion. After the abortion, I felt that Herschel began distancing himself from me. I fled Dallas within days after the abortion and did not go back to even visit for the next 15 years because I was so traumatized by what Herschel had put me through.
The unnamed woman who spoke at a news conference with her attorney, Gloria Allred, wants to stay unnamed because she fears for her safety. Three men were convicted on all charges related to supporting a plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer in 2020. Joe Morrison, his father-in-law Pete Musico, and Paul Beller will be sentenced in December. A Wisconsin jury on Wednesday convicted 40-year-old Daryl Brooks Jr. of killing six people and injuring at least 60 others in November after he drove his SUV into a Christmas parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Brooks was found guilty on all 76 charges in the hit and run, including 6 counts of intentional homicide and 61 counts of recklessly endangering safety. And next, Florida, where a judge ruled that Governor Ron DeSantis must turn over his records connected with his taxpayer-funded flights of migrants from Texas to Massachusetts, saying his administration failed to comply with the state public records law. Although DeSantis says they'll appeal, his office did, on Wednesday, release unredacted waivers signed by those migrants who flew on the planes, as well as unredacted photographs. The judge stated in his verbal ruling that the governor's office had no reason to keep that information confidential. But that's not Ronnie's only problem. He's apparently got a Donnie problem, too. Yeah, the former guy announced an upcoming rally in Florida with Senator Marco Rubio. But DeSantis wasn't invited, even though he's currently running for re-election in the state, too. Aww. Yeah, the relationship between Trump and DeSantis seems to have grown distant. Maybe because they both want to run for president. Trump is reportedly annoyed that DeSantis hasn't said he wouldn't run in 2024 if the former guy does. Now, children. Meanwhile, Trump seems to be accelerating his plans for another presidential run and continuing to suck all the air out of the room. Yeah, there are other stories concerning his orangeness, like Politico reporting that a federal judge is considering whether to unseal secret court documents detailing Trump's efforts to prevent his former aides from testifying to a grand jury about those efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Chief U.S. District Court Judge Beryl Howell on Wednesday asked the DOJ to weigh in on unsealing requests made by Politico and the New York Times. Trump has continued quietly waging and losing court battles in recent weeks to prevent his former aides from testifying to the grand jury. And stingy much? The former guy has been bilking his followers out of their hard-earned cash for years, and it turns out he's keeping just about all of it for himself. Trump's Make America Great Again, Inc. Super PAC has so far reported a total of $8.5 million spent for Republican Senate candidates. To put it in perspective, that's barely 4% of the $204.5 million that McConnell's Senate Leadership Fund has spent. Just saying. And if Trump's PAC continues spending or not spending at the rate it did for the first half of the month, Trump will still have more than $80 million available for his own political or more likely personal use after the midterms. What did they say about a sucker born every minute? Just saying. Oh, by the way, nobody won the Powerball lottery, so the jackpot climbs to an estimated $800 million. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.